anime Death Spiral. We're coming at you this time with a special episode because Nate is fleeing the country.
You know, I've got some heat on me right now. I just need to lay low. I'm going to go give myself a nice little vacation while the authorities no longer have me on any of their lists.
Yeah, you've been posting too hard recently and you've ended up on some government watch lists. And you're going to the Holy Land.
I am.
Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing the anime dream.
I'm doing
incredible.
The thing.
And this is the second time, right?
It is. It is the second time. First time,
man,
doing it all in my lonesome. I'm afraid. What happens if I run afoul of the Yakuza? I'm just a little guy. I can't defend myself.
Yeah, what if you do that thing that you see where you're walking in Shinjuku or whatever at night and you get suckered in by the beautiful ladies?
Well, let's be honest, that's not gonna happen. I'm pretty well aware of my surroundings. I think I've got a pretty strong handle on that. I know when I'm being taken advantage of.
By that you mean that you can't bring yourself to make eye contact with strangers.
Yep. No, that is what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm feeling very anxious about having to take the train, you know, presumably with other people on it. My solace here is that having done this before, I can safely say that everybody else in that train is going to be having the same thought. Just like, man, I hope nobody fucking looks at me. Nobody better fucking talk to me on this fucking train.
And you were telling me, too, you have that inner ear problem where you can't bow. Makes you sick to bend over in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds tricky. I don't know how you're going to deal with that.
You know, it almost caused a diplomatic situation last time I was there, you know, but
yeah.
I've been going to physical therapy. I've been taking the medication. I can now get to a 15 degree angle at the waist, and that's big progress. All right.
Constant improvement.
Yeah.
And you do know the quickest way to the embassy from any location in Tokyo, right?
I've got them tattooed on my chest just in case I wake up with amnesia.
Sure, prison break style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. good.
I've got the entire Shinjuku underground, you know, the map tattooed on my back.
You know, when you're traveling, you want to be as safe as possible.
It's true.
In honor of you leaving the country, we wanted to do an international celebration of anime. And since you're going over there, we wanted to talk about anime that comes over here, if you can even imagine that.
I can't even imagine that.
Not a Japanese high school, not a special academy where you learn curse breaking or exorcism or what are the other things you learn at special academies? Maho.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, how to be a VTuber. Is a pretty big one.
Oh yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. Right.
How to run real fast so that people can win money from betting off of you.
Yep.
That seems to be a pretty big one.
How to be a good host or hostess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know. How to be a government employee? What are the anime that are about like the student council? That whole genre.
Oh my god. There are too many.
I know.
Many. I tend to prefer the ones where they are opposing the student council. You know, we've talked about Asobe Asobase a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love it when the precocious teens have to thwart the insanely fascist moral committee.
Yeah.
The ethics committee.
That is, and I've talked about this before, specifically within, you know, the setting of a Japanese high school, the social hierarchies and the faculty reinforced, strict, rigid, like social structure baffles me. And the phenomena of the morals committee, you know, that you see pop up, the ethics committee in all of these things. It's just like, why are we specifically creating a student like Stasi?
It is paradoxically creating the social conditions for like Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, hey, that Lord of the Flies thing How can we make that happen here, domestically?
How can we make that happen, but hide it behind the bureaucratic efficiency?
Like, the fact that they wear armbands is not subtle at all. They have to know that, right? That's intentional.
Okay, we're going way too off track. We want to talk about
topic.
Non-Japanese anime.
Yes. Let's
it's too much. That's too much. Let's talk about anime that's set in... unfortunately, we put together this list and it ended up being
mostly Central European.
White European countries.
That
was not intentional.
That is not our fault. That is anime's fault. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. We did cut some Brazilian shows, some Middle Eastern set shows.
Okay, we should just give a quick nod to what we did cut, just to show that we were considering every option, okay?
Sure.
You know, Dragon's Heaven obviously is Brazilian in setting, which I think is the coolest thing about it. It's a post-apocalyptic desert Brazil, which is awesome. You know, like I was saying earlier, Jess, it felt weird to include on a top 10 list because it is only a 35-minute, 40-minute OVA compared to much longer stuff that we have included.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, Michiko and Hachin is very famously set in Brazil, and I really like that. It's a little maybe too horny for its own good, but... it's great animation. It's like a fun story. It's not super racist. it's okay.
Thank
you
God.
Know, that's cool. There's some other ones, you know, but we have our official list, and we're gonna do a countdown. We're gonna do 10 to 1. We managed to actually put together 10 shows
that we agreed on.
And since Nate is going to be gone, we're going to do a two-parter, the famed two-parter. So for this episode, we're going to count up from 10 to 6. This is exciting. Everybody loves lists. Lists are great.
Okay, you're being facetious, but the metrics show that people actually do love lists. So let's just get into it.
They love it, and they love ranking.
Yeah. Oh. It's hardwired into us.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear. This is in order of goodness. So mm-hmm. The shows get from bad to good. So we are making objective claims about the quality of each of these anime.
So what you're saying right now is, if we're counting up and we're doing 10 to 6, this is the bad episode. This is the bottom of the list.
Yes, these are the worst shows on our list.
Which is a list of all good things, I want to be clear about.
Well, we'll get there. All right, let's officially begin with our list, starting at 10. Why don't you give us number 10, because this is one of yours.
All right, hailing from that misty isle, English representation coming in at number 10, we have Helsing, which is, of course, about a bunch of English goth vampires fighting a bunch of Nazi vampires. I think that's pretty self-explanatory.
Well, not a bunch, right? Isn't there really only the one vampire?
No. There is a cabal of Nazi vampires, and then they use, they basically use their vampire powers to make a bunch of unwilling vampires who also become Nazis. I don't know. They weren't clear on whether or not becoming a vampire turns you into a Nazi.
Well, there is one vampire in particular who's not a Nazi.
Yes. Well, no, he's
just kind of a freak.
Yeah. No, he's
like a murder junkie.
He's just kind of a murder junkie. He likes doing that kind of stuff. You know, killing makes him feel like good.
He has no particular ideology.
Alucard, the big guy, you know, he's a... what would you say? He's an employee, a unwilling... soldier.
Yeah, I mean he's bound, unfortunately, mm-hmm. to the will of a bunch of pathetic Anglicans.
Yeah.
Who otherwise cannot fight back against the Nazi vampire horde.
Well, okay, so we're leaving out that it's actually a three-way conflict between the Nazi vampires, the Anglican Church, using Alucard, and of course the vampire hunting Catholic Church wing.
Yes, the Vatican does get involved, the nefarious Vatican.
Not just the Vatican, specifically the shadow organization of Opus Dei is in charge of the vampire.
Templar.
Yeah, is in charge of the vampire hunting operation. So it's it takes a bunch of weird like Knights Templar English kind of legend symbology and filters it through early 2000s like hardcore metal edginess. I don't know. It holds a special place in 13-year-old me's heart, you know?
Yeah, I think this is an inclusion on this list mostly because of its cultural impact. This is like the 13-year-old edgelord canon, right?
Yeah.
This got a lot of like Americans into anime, edgelord anime in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Despite this not actually being super edgy. I mean, there's plenty of like cartoony violence, but compared to some other anime, I mean, shit. Compared to the End of Evangelion that we were watching at the same time, it's like pretty tame, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So that's our number 10.
Number 10. And, you know, the setting is, of course, a bunch of blonde, blue-eyed, white British people who unfortunately happen to be cops.
Excuse you, Alucard has black hair and red eyes, and he's 7 feet tall.
Well, he's the exception. He's evil, so he doesn't have blonde hair and blue eyes. The visual storytelling is very clear on this. Okay, let's move up. This one I chose, and there are a few here that are a little dubious. I chose to exclude shows that are mostly like country hopping, you know, like Helsing. D. Gray Man has a lot of Catholicism and Vatican stuff in it, but they travel all over Europe. So, like, putting that one aside. But Ergo Proxy, you might not traditionally associate with a specific real-world place, but if you pay attention, it is supposed to be a post-apocalyptic, post-techno-apocalyptic, by the way, Moscow, which, you know, brings in a lot of commentary, very vague commentary about Soviet governance, but also... the fear of like horrifying techno billionaires converting society into like this horrifying mix of cultureless mush and constant surveillance state terror.
Man, I'm glad that's all in fiction.
Yeah, thank God nothing's happening like that. The Torment Nexus is not being invented. But Ergo Proxy is, I think, unique. In a very specific way, not just because it is extraordinarily visually striking.
Yeah.
But it's just not like other anime. This is very much like a midnight Adult Swim, like, hey, you, this isn't your fucking Naruto's, right?
Sure, yeah.
This ain't Bleach. This is some shit that's gonna fuck you up.
Well, that's specifically, like, why I want to go back and give Ergo Proxy another watch, because it has been since it was airing on Adult Swim when I was a teenager, since I watched it last. And so I feel at the time I was like, wow, that show sure is weird. Isn't anime like wacky sometimes? And I can, you know, very clearly say like I didn't quite fully grasp everything that the show was doing, both in terms of the plot and like the subtext of, you know, the post-technological apocalypse world and its kind of commentary on post-Soviet states morphing into capitalist hellholes. So I would definitely go back and give that one a rewatch with more mature eyes.
It's great. It is just fantastic. I think what turns off maybe younger version of you is that it is so bleak.
Well, I mean, if we're going by like what was appealing to little edgelord me when I was like 15, 16, the aesthetics of the show were not the issue. It was that it had like oftentimes an intentionally dreamlike narrative mixed in with kind of the cyberpunk thriller plot line that it was putting forward, and there was a lot of kind of navel-gazy philosophy.
Oh, yeah. Radiohead did the ending credits.
Yeah.
And well, so, did. They used a Radiohead song.
And so, you know, I think my initial reaction as a teenager was just like, unfortunately, like, wow, I wish I understood this super pretentious show. Going back, I think that it's probably not as pretentious as it first came off to a young me.
I don't think it is. And my big point about Ergo Proxy, like in general, is that it is the only good animated version of Blame. It's as close as we get, honestly.
Sorry, but Netflix fucked it up. Sorry, the Blame that we got was not good.
It's very unfortunate that we ended up with that 3D Blame. I can't get into it. I can't get it. Let's move on. Ergo Proxy is great, but number eight, I went with Banana Fish. And I know you're not particularly familiar with this, but
yeah,
there are
I'm gonna
a couple
defer to you on this one because I have not read or seen Banana Fish. I have heard about it, though. I understand that it's significant.
It is significant. And I think I wanted to include this not because, like, not just because, like, New York is a big part of this show. We have two main characters, and one of them is, like, a New York gutter punk who meets up with a secondary protagonist who is a Japanese transplant.
Okay.
But... like, the streets of New York are important to Banana Fish. And it's also, like, very particular mix of, like, violent street punk action with boys' love, like, a more traditional, like, boys' love story. And that is pretty unique, or at least I think it's become more popular.
Okay.
And it's very entertaining and weird. And its depiction of New York is hilarious. It's just like, you know, the most violent, awful place you could imagine. Mm-hmm. It's almost like there are times when it portrays New York as if it's like the Warriors, which is awesome, but without like the crazy costumes.
For some reason, there are people out there who are still convinced that New York has not changed since like the 1970s, like you said, Warriors depiction, you know, like in that Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie that took place in like supposedly an ambiguous time frame, but it was very obviously like 70s crusty New York with the graffiti and trash blown in the wind everywhere. Like, people just think that's what New York is still like.
Yes, there are competing visions of New York, but like this is going with more of like, you know, the action, the gritty action version of New York, which has a little bit of like a little bit of Taxi Driver in it, but also an attempt to kind of modernize that stuff. So you've got lots of gang stuff mostly, which is fun as like the setting of a boys' love story. I think it's like really cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on here.
Okay.
You fought for this one, so why don't you go for it? Number seven.
And I'm having some second thoughts about this.
Too late.
I know, too late. Okay, so what I settled on my number seven was JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, specifically Golden Wind arc, as representative of, you know, the Mediterranean, Italian coast area.
Cosa Nostra.
specifically Sicily, you know, the heart of the Italian mafia. And
yes, we've all seen Godfather.
And so it was I'm having some second thoughts because I up until right now I had forgot about Black Lagoon, which takes place in Kuala Lumpur. And now I kind of want to insert that in just as a to break up the Eurocentrism a little
bit. Oh, my God. He's going rogue.
I'm going rogue.
He's going rogue. I cannot agree with that. One, because they moved to a lot of different locations. And two, because it is Edgelord assassin stuff.
Okay, fair enough. I just want to point out that I was thinking of it. Okay, number seven, Golden Wind JoJo. What is there to say? It's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. But, I mean, Golden Wind arc, I think, may be my number two. If we're going of JoJo's, and I'm not going to elaborate on that to save on time, but it's up there for me. I think that it's got the most style. I think that in terms of the evolution of how Araki, you know, conceptualizes the stand battles, this is the one where he really just kind of like, he's like, all
right, goes insane.
Yeah, fuck it. I'm not gonna try and justify any of this. I'm just gonna let it rip, you know. And so,
well, this one he very famously had to like completely retcon two of the stands. One because one of our main party members was just like, oh, this is too powerful.
This guy's too powerful, so
this doesn't make sense. I have to remove him from the story.
Okay, but the way he removes him is great because the character just says, all right, I'm out now.
I'm fucking out, dude. This sucks.
There's no like dramatic death at the end of a battle, you know, where he gets like ceremoniously killed off with a big heartfelt send off from all the characters. It's just like, no, you know, I'm like bored. I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't want to do this anymore. And of course, then the bosses stand as well. The main end boss of this arc,
Diavolo.
Whose stand was so complicated. It had to be explained both in and out of the story like multiple times. It just like he had to draw diagrams.
Okay, here's the thing. I understand how Diavolo's power works. I did not have an issue grasping that. I don't know how Giorno's power works. What does he do specifically? Explain it to me now.
No, I think his is pretty simple, though it does change from the beginning of the story to the end of the story. Diavolo, who is Diop, he is Diablo.
The big man.
He's pretty on the nose on that one. Giorno's power is that he, like, inserts life into things, right?
Yes, but then also the life that he creates, like, he can imbue it with an ambiguous level of instinct. Because on multiple times, he's had, you know, trick victories in a battle where
trickeries.
Yeah, where he will imbue some kind of object with life and then it instinctually tries to return to a specific location. You know, example, like he turned his brooch into the ladybug, right? So that it would come back to him after he's been incapacitated and then re-imbue him with some kind of healing energy that he set up in it.
Yeah, he puts life into things. And this does change, like I said, from the beginning, where the demonstration of his power is that he turns a seed into a full plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the end of the series, where he kind of just, like, puts energy into things and they do what he wants.
Yeah.
It's a change that is pretty common in JoJo. You know, it is much like the way Josuke's power like does not work at the same way at the beginning of the story and at the end. It very much so evolves, quote unquote, to do what Araki wants. But that's just part of JoJo, right?
Well, yeah, evolution of stands has been a thing in JoJo since
stands.
Yeah, since stands. Because Star Platinum gets an upgrade at the end, right?
Yeah, he doesn't even get an upgrade. So in the story, he just figures out that he wasn't using his stand power the entire time. He's just like, oh shit, I could do that? I didn't even know.
What a dummy.
Which is really funny. It's super funny.
That guy's a scientist.
So this is one of those things where I was kind of at first disagreeing with the inclusion of Golden Wind, because JoJo is so famously set all across the world. not just Jotaro's literal voyage across the entire world, but every arc is set, you know, somewhere different. You know, we start in the UK, and then we go to New York, right? Mm-hmm. And then we go to everywhere in the world, and then we go to Japan, and then we go to Italy, and then we go to Florida, and then we go to the Wild West. You know, it just keeps going.
Yeah. I don't know. I wanted to include this one specifically, like I said, because it marks a major evolution in Araki's style and approach to the way he creates these stories and the characters.
Yes, it marks his first twink.
Yeah.
His first twink JoJo.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm maybe an inelegant way of saying what I was trying to get at. But you can tell that this is where he really started to let his love of haute couture fashion like really influence how he views this whole thing. It was always kind of there, but this is the one where he's like, no, actually I'm a designer now, and I'm going to just put my designs in this comic that I draw.
Hell yeah.
Which is great.
It's great.
That's why I was advocating for Golden Wind.
Yes. It's very funny that he chose the classic, the almost epitome of, like, you know, traditional masculinity setting of, like, mafiosos for his debut of, like, the most androgynous, lanky twink boys in the entire series.
Why didn't he include any, like, Sopranos, like, Godfather, old, fat, bald dudes? They just look kind of greasy all over.
There's, like, a couple at the beginning of the story, like, the one that, like, Giorno kills, right?
But even that guy, he looked like a giant pufferfish man. He didn't look like Tony Soprano.
No, he just looks like a weird, gross guy.
Yeah.
It's very funny. That entire thing is so hilarious to me.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. The last one in this first break, Gankotsuo.
The Count of Monte Cristo.
Coming in at number six. Number six. Gankotsuo.
Number six.
This show is one of the anime that is closest to my heart, in that when I gave up on anime as a teenager, the discovery of Gankotsuo was one of the things that convinced me that actually maybe anime can be something more than the bullshit that I was watching at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This was part of my redemption arc as an anime person.
This pulled you back in. This showed you,
yes,
the other side of the coin, so to speak.
Because this is not some pervy rom-com. This is not some, like, battle manga shonen. This is something completely different. Not only is it an insanely wild interpretation of a classic novel, The Count of Monte Cristo, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the most visually striking, inventive, and experimental pieces of modern anime that exists. It's hard to think about other shows that come close to this.
You can't even think of a comparison.
Oh, you know what? I think Mononoke took up the mantle here.
I was about to say that, yeah.
Yes.
You know, both of them are these, from what I've seen, because I have not seen Gankotsuo.
Which you need to rectify immediately.
Yeah, but they, you know, Gankotsuo, its art is this beautiful composition style inspired by Gustav Klimt, you know? With these,
yes, exactly,
amazing, you know, like fabric textures and flowing outfit designs that kind of accentuate just color and vibrance. And it's like, it's legitimately, from the clips I've seen, like something beautiful. Like, it's really, really cool.
It is beautiful. And it was one of the first things I ever saw that uses this technique where textured background papers, while the action and outlines of characters and things would move, the textures on their clothing or the walls or certain, like, foreground elements would not move with them. Mm-hmm. So as if the characters are moving across these like beautiful textured papers. It is hard to describe the effect, but it is immediately striking, like truly, truly great. And to match the book that it's based on, right, the Count of Monte Cristo, a very famous novel by Alexandre Dumas, who wrote the Three Musketeers, very, you know, probably the most famous.
Yep. Love that guy.
Which there are also anime based on that too. Not as good as this one, but they exist. Is based in this incredibly bizarre, like neo-futurist Paris, which is fantastic. They move around France. I believe one of the mansions is like very specifically Marseille, but a lot of it has taken place in Paris during big festivals. Part of it takes place on the moon because people, these like, you know, insanely rich aristocrats just party wherever the fuck they want. It is a bleak future in terms of class war.
Sure, why not? Let's party on the moon.
Yeah, but also like the Count of Monte Cristo here in the original book, he is like a kind of a man scorned and then returning as this mysterious figure to get revenge. In this one, he returns as something like not even quite human. He sort of looks like a dark elf or like a demon. And he's incredibly beautiful, but also like imposing and bizarre looking. And it is such an incredible choice. And obviously all of these things take place in these like, you know, lavish settings that are based on like Rococo France and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It is just one of the best anime. It's just one of the best. And it was part of a movement that was like, you know, this mid 2000s. I think it was literally like 2004, maybe, where we were suddenly getting a more interesting influx of lesser anime, you know, spreading out from things that were just not shonens or like the weird, you know, midnight edgelord stuff.
Sure.
This was like a thing that was not going to be on TV, something way off the beaten path. And like I said, this revived my entire interest in anime. Well, along with a few other things, but we're not going to talk about them here. That's number six.
All right.
Genkotsuo.
We did it. That's our bottom five.
That's our bottom five. The bottom five, the five worst shows on the list.
All right.
All right.
We're going to take a break.
Excuse me. We're going to take a break here. Go ahead.
Oh, no, excuse me. We're going to take a break here. And then we're going to take a break here. And then we're going to come back next week with our top five best shows on this list. And that, dear listener, is going to be the real good shit. Trust me.
The five good shows. The top five good shows on the list.
Well, specifically the top five good shows that do not take place in Japan. Yes.
That are filled with white people. The top best white people anime.
Okay, we're losing it. Let's say
all right, bye. Anime
Take
Death Spiral. What?
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 Oh, I didn't know you were... Okay. No, I was just saying take it away.
You good? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right, shut the fuck up.